Americans and You're Alive. Armed Forces Radio brings you a special rebroadcast with Victor Young and the orchestra, the Ken Darby Singers, John Nesbitt, and America's beloved baritone, John Charles Thomas.
Dear friends, this is John Charles Thomas. Well, here we are again with another half hour of song, story, and music for you men and women in the armed forces of the United Nations. For story, we have John Nesbitt, one of America's best. For music, there's Victor Young and the orchestra. And for song, the Ken Darby Chorus and myself. And now, Vic, with the preliminaries over, let's get started. My song to start off today's program is one by Richard Hageman. It's called Miranda.
Do you remember an inn, Miranda? Do you remember an inn? And the tearing and the spreading of the straw for a bedding, and the fleas that tease in the High Pyrenees, and the wine that tasted like tar, and the cheers and the jeers of the young muleteers under the dark of the fine veranda. Remember an inn, Miranda? Do you remember an inn? And the hammer at the doors and the din, and the hip hop hop of the clasp of the hands, to the swirl and the twirl of the girl gone chancing, glancing, dancing, backing and advancing. Laughing of the clapper to the spin, out and in, and the ting, tang, tang, tang of the guitar.
I don't know how many of you will remember the Broadway play Aphrodite, which starred Ethel Clayton of the silent films. But the play had as its love theme a very beautiful waltz which deserves to be remembered. So Victor Young is going to recall it for you now. Thank you. Carrie Jacobs Bond, in her long and successful career as a songwriter, composed many songs of such wide popularity that they have practically become a part of our American life. Out of these, one of these, a song well known and very dear to most of you, is The End of a Perfect Day. Come to the end of a perfect day, and you sit alone with your thought, while the chimes ring out with a carol gay, for a joy that the day has brought. Do you think what the end perfect day can mean to a tired heart? When the sun goes down with a flaming ray, and the dear friends have to part. It leaves a thought that is big and strong, with a wish that is kind and true. For a memory has faded this perfect day with colors that never fade. And we find at the end of a perfect day the soul of a friend we've made.
Remember when a big day's outing consisted of packing a lunch basket and taking your girl on a trolley ride to the end of the line for a picnic? If you were a real gay blade, you may probably have worn a large celluloid button in your lapel or a hat band which read in large letters, "Oh, you kid," or 23 Skidoo, according to your tastes. The Trolley Song.
Was pretty in her high-top shoes with her hair piled high upon her head. She went to lose a jolly hour on the trolley, but she lost her heart instead. He wore a derby and a bright green tie. He was quite the handsomest of men. Well, he looked at her and she looked at him. Then they both looked again. Clang, clang, clang went the trolley.
removed his hat and took a seat. He said he hoped he hadn't stepped upon her feet. She dropped her eyes, the blushes came, then he grew bolder.
And asked her name.
It's time now to turn from song and music to an adventure in words. That means it's time to hear again from John Nesbitt.
Have you ever been out on a brilliant moonlight night in the forest when the trees stand out like jet-black cutouts against the sky? On the 10th of October in 1918, there was a night like that in the Minnesota forest. It was clear and dry, and in the lumbering town of Cloquet, people stopped on the sidewalks that night and stared up at the sky, and they said there never has been such a brilliant moon. And there were other things strange that they remembered later. Far down the street, people talking could be plainly heard. And the barking of dogs from clear on the other side of town, too. And the whine of the sawmills down on the river. Sound seemed to carry oddly well that night. And as you drew a breath, it hurt your lungs. On the morning of the 12th, the sunlight streaming in through the windows had an odd coppery color. It was just like an eclipse. And the birds twittered in the trees, and then they went back to roost. And as you stepped outside, a soft white snow fell upon your hair and shoulders. And as you looked up at the forest hills, a black cloud was rising 30,000 feet above the earth. It appeared like a titanic cloudburst of rain was about to drop from the heavens. But it was not water that was to drop. It was death itself. It was smoke. The white flakes were ashes. 20 miles up the river, the greatest tragedy other than war or earthquake which can strike a nation had begun. The whole countryside was on fire. And up the river, the deep red flames were now leaping 1,000 feet into the sky. From every farm and village in their path, people were packing into cars and wagons and fleeing down the highway. At one sharp bend in the road, this stream of cars slowed and came to a stop. It was a 2-mile-long traffic jam. It was the last traffic jam those people would ever be in. Near Moosehead Lake, deer, rabbits, squirrels, bears, and 200 humans fled for their lives toward the water. At Kettle River, 13 persons found a deep stone-lined well, and they climbed down into it, knowing that the flames could never reach them there. And at the railroad depot in Cloquet, the agent frantically drummed on the telegraph key, ordering every train for miles around to come and help with the rescue. By 6 o'clock that evening, the fire was roaring into the west end of town. Flaming branches were being ripped off the trees and flung into the air. Whole blazing haystacks were picked up entire and scattered over every rooftop. Burning shingles and full-sized boards were ripped off the houses and flung into the streets. For nature has almost a diabolical habit in these mad attacks of hers, for she now added to the terror a hurricane. a screaming gale of 76 miles an hour, the highest ever recorded there. So by 8 o'clock, the entire town of Cloquet prepared to die. 8,500 men, women, and children, packed into the 6 trains that the station agent had finally succeeded in getting, and with paint blistering and windows shattered by the heat, the trains pulled out. And behind the last car, the town of Cloquet, which had been these people's home for all of their lives, went up in one gigantic, roaring inferno of fire. Well, the cost of that fire was $30 million. And the cost of that fire was 538 charred, blackened bodies. At the edge of Moosehead Lake lay the bodies of the 200 humans who had not quite reached the water in time. And at that bend in the highway, the stalled cars of that traffic jam were a mass of black and buckled steel, so that to this day they still call it Death Curve. And in the deep, stone-lined well, the 13 people who'd climbed into it were right. The flames had not touched them, nor the heat, nor the smoke. But the fire had sucked every breath of oxygen out of that well. They had no air to breathe, and so they had strangled. But even this was not all the cost. The people of Cloquet slowly drifted back to their homes, to the empty chimneys, the twisted iron bedsteads, and the gaunt black skeletons of the forest that for 30 years had been their only livelihood, and now the very seeds in the ground had been killed by the heat, and there never would be a real forest there again. Jack pine and balsam and aspen would spring up, but these trees were useless to the mills. They were too small. And one man spoke the words that were on every mind. Well, what are we coming home for at all? There's nothing left. And a strange thing then happened, because the town of Cloquet refused to die. They went out into their smoking forest, and they dragged in the charred and blackened logs. Mill workers in roofless mills sawed them into boards, and at night, under swinging gasoline lanterns, whole families worked together to nail them into houses. And the mill owners got together, and they hired chemists. And all that winter, the chemists worked among their test tubes, chopping up jack pine and aspen and balsam, these useless trees, and shredding them and boiling them and treating them with chemicals. And 2 years after that fire, out of brand new mills came the first sheet of an utterly new material made out of useless timber. It was insulating wallboard. And today it's a great industry for the city of Cloquet, the city which refused to die. And it is curious that out of the supreme tragedy of one of the most frightful forest fires ever to strike America should have come this new life, this new hope, and a great new industry for a city that refused to die from the passing parade.
Thank you, John Nesbitt.
daigne de tout danger, toujours, toujours la protéger. Cette soeur si chérie, tu daigne de tout danger, la protéger. Daigne la protéger de tout danger. Délivré d'une triste pensée, j'irai chercher la gloire au sein des ennemis, le premier au plus bravo de la mêlée. J'irai combattre pour mon pays, et si vers lui Dieu me rappelle, je veillerai sur toi, fidèle.
Several difficult pieces for orchestra which one from start to finish in a rapid, continuous flow of music. One of them was written by Johann Strauss, which he called Perpetual Motion. Here it is, played by Victor Young. Thank you. mind, Victor. And now the lovely old hymn, Come Thou Almighty King.
Come Thou Almighty King, help us Thy name to sing, help us to praise, Father all glorious, for all victorious, come and reign over us, Ancient of Days.
Come now in
Armed Forces Radio Service.